On behalf of Cooper's Tavern, welcome again to the Cooper's Tavern Lacrosse Podcast on VarsitySportsNetwork.com. Cooper's is a classic American establishment with four locations in the area, specializing in only the freshest seafood, meats, poultry, and produce, along with an extensive beer and wine selection. Combining excellent service in a family-friendly atmosphere, Cooper's has become recognized as serving one of the must-try burgers across the country. We're here for our second segment to discuss high school sports here in the Maryland area. Once again, I'm Matt Kennedy, and I'm here again with alongside lacrosse greats Rick Brocato and Ron Klausner. And we're going to spend the next hour or so talking about our favorite topic, high school lacrosse. And this week we have a special guest in John Blatchley. Many of you remember John and his Loyola High School fantastic career, and he went on to Towson University to become a two-time All-American. So welcome to John. Once again, welcome to Rick and Ron. And another thing, if we want to hear back from you guys. So go to the VarsitySportsNetwork.com website and look for the podcast and click on that. And you can email us, and we want to hear your thoughts. What are we doing? Are we doing it right? Are we doing it wrong? We want to hear your opinions and what we need to talk about. Also, the podcasts are available on iTunes, so check it out on iTunes as well. Our first segment is O'Connor Mooney and Fitzgerald Hot Seat segment. As a locally owned and managed firm, O'Connor Mooney and Fitzgerald is committed to knowing each and every client they serve. This is a genuinely Baltimore mindset, born of a generally Baltimore legacy established by two thoroughly Baltimore guys, Tom Mooney and Sean O'Connor. It is enhanced now by the blending of their company with another well-established, independent, and locally owned firm, Chase Fitzgerald & Company. They're now O'Connor Mooney and Fitzgerald Realtors. It's a name you know and a team you can trust. They like to say, when our sign is on the lawn, our name is on the line. So visit them at www.oconnorhomes.com for more information. And this week's Hot Seat segment is going to be on specialized training, and we have a couple guys here who know a little bit about it. We'll start with Ron on his opinion on what's going on out there in this game now with the specialization and this training and coaching and all that good stuff.
Wow, it's honestly exploded. Over the past 5 years, you see so many kids that, you know, they go from practice to then they're going to the gym, they're going to see their trainer, and their trainer doesn't actually have to be someone that deals with weights and conditioning and strength. It really has to do with a lot with your positional play. If you're a face-off expert, you're working with a lot of young kids. And what you're doing is you're getting extra reps that you're not getting technically throughout the day in practice and on weekends. A lot of times you're going 2-3 times a week. And what we have seen is that you're seeing a lot of money that these guys are the cost factor to actually do this, whether it's $30, $40, $50 a session. For parents, it's quite expensive. You know, it's a car payment to send your kid to a lot of these types of specialized trainings. And you know, I used to do them as a defensive coach. I used to have my clients and head to their house and work with them, whether it's $50 or $60 an hour. And you're noticing it more and more. If you don't do the trainings, you feel like you're falling behind. You might not be falling behind, but you feel like you are. And I think that what you have is that you're keeping up with the Joneses. We talked about this, last week. You know, try to keep up with people that are working consistently time in every single day. I know guys who are hitting the wall and then hitting the cage, and it's just too much. Are we doing too much in this sport to our kids that makes it detrimental to their growth? I'm not sure.
I'm going to jump in too, because I see the merit in specialized training, but I'm telling you what, it's added to a whole new segment of the sport that I don't like seeing, and that's total specialization. You know, we talked a little bit last week about kids not playing two and three sports. And part of that is because of this specialized training that's going on right now. Kids feel like they have to, exactly as you said, they have to stay ahead of the curve. And they're getting, you know, their 50 or 60 or maybe even 80 bucks in with their midfield coach or their attacker, their defense or goalie coach. And then they're maybe doing 2 and 3 sessions with some kind of conditioning coach. And they're spending another, let's say, 70 bucks a pop a week there. You know, these numbers start to add up, really rack up. And, you know, I think it's also leading to injuries in sports because these kids are using the same muscles, joints over and over and over again rather than using different muscles, different joints, playing different sports. That's why we have an uptick in back fractures. We have an uptick in hip issues. We have an uptick in knee injuries. And I think it's all leading back to some of this specialized training. And really, even you can, if you add me, you throw the clubs into it as well. I think these kids are playing way too much lacrosse right now, and they need to be playing some other sports. They need to learn how to compete in other sports, use other muscles in other sports, and we need to give some of these families and kids a break, not only financially, but their bodies as well.
Yeah, once again, John Blatchley's joining us on the O'Connor Mooney and Fitzgerald Hot Seat segment. And John, I know you have 3 boys, 12, 10, and 8, I believe you said, and you're coaching them. So you're beginning all of this, what do we ever call this, lacrosse coaching,
nightmare.
I was going to say
welcome
insanity.
Welcome to the game.
But we don't want
insanity actually is a great word for that.
It is, Ron. It really is. I like that.
So, John, you're a relatively young parent with 3 young guys, and you're going through this now. Where do you see?
Ronnie and Brock just hit it on the head. You know, it depends on where you are to put a perspective into it. And the training, you know, with the teams that we see – my oldest is 12 and his level is 24s, 2024s in the club world. And it's amazing the talent that's there. It's amazing that these kids can play multiple sports but yet have so much time and energy put into lacrosse, and both on the financial end, the training side. I've seen this work both ways, you know, and the trainers are gonna add to Brock's point that, hey, if they're getting hurt because they're not with me, right? So if they're with me spending the money putting time in, then I'm going to get him better prepared. And the fact that he's not, it's because that's why he's getting hurt. And so I see both sides of it. I've had players at, this is 6th graders. These are 12-year-olds. And I've seen players within a progression of 3 months go to specialized training and really see improvements with their games. But again, that's an exception to the rule. I don't think that's the standard rule across the board. I can see others that invest in training for 6 months, and personally, I don't see any progressions from that side. So it's really hard. I'm a fan. I played 2 sports. My boys played 2 sports. I'm a fan of in-season sports. When I coach all 3 club teams, I try to let them put the focus on their in-season sport. But yet here lies the problem. We still have out-of-season practices for lacrosse. So we start lacrosse in August. We have fall lacrosse through the fall. We go indoor through December, January, February. We start indoor training in February and March. We play in 2 spring leagues in the summer, in the spring, excuse me. And then the summer starts with tournaments. And so, you know, we're out the door for probably, I would say, 30 days before we run it all back again. And this is at levels of 12-year-olds, 10-year-olds, and 8-year-olds.
All right, I'm going to go to you, Ron. So we all know there's a problem here. Everyone talks about it. The coaches talk about it. We hear it in the college coaching level. You know, Rick coached forever at St. Paul's. He's been talking about it. How do we address this? How does this problem get solved, or can it?
You know, can it be solved? Sure. I think anything can be solved. Will it be solved is another question. I don't know if anybody really wants to solve this issue now. I think that U.S. lacrosse has put a lot of, or trying to make changes in things that we do as players to modify the game at the younger levels, which probably in turn, I don't necessarily 100% agree or disagree with what they're trying to do, but there's changes that are trying that are on the table to be made, which will give the kids the opportunity not to push themselves to the extent that they're pushing themselves right now. You know, and look, I can say I hate it. I'm just as guilty as the next person, though. Look, I have my son who is in eighth grade, and he is started a program in the fall, and he's going to get back to it shortly, getting up at 5:30 in the morning, going to the trainer to do weight training. Meanwhile, I can either do two things. I can get my my butt up and work out with him, or I'm going to sit in the car and sleep because I'm tired at that point. And he's going through this, and now he has to go from there, and then he has to go to school directly. We got to race to get to school to go do that, to then go practice with his lacrosse team later on that night, and then potentially games and other stuff on the weekends. I'm just as guilty as the next person. How do you stop it? I really don't know, because you're not alone in what you're trying to make change. But by making change, the only way you can do change is if everybody agrees. And nobody is ever, one club will push the envelope just a little bit more. And then one trainer will push that envelope. And then again, are you with them or you're not? You do more than us.
And, you know, you got a lot of money invested in here, in this, you know. There's a lot of money in it. And so I think once that genie's been out of the bottle, it's hard to get it back in the bottle. I really do. And so, you know, my feel is we need to take a deep breath, stand back, and as adults, we need to assess the situation for the kids, or else we're putting the kids at jeopardy. We're putting their bodies at jeopardy. They're going to be burning out on the sport. And I think that's a crisis. We're facing that crossroads here pretty soon, if not there already.
And I want to add one other thing. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, and as you know, his son, a very close, you know, child that I know, and you know, I'm considered Uncle Ron too. You know, and we were talking, how many events you doing this summer? 13 events. You know, the summer is only so long, and events typically are on weekends. If you take a look at what the summer looks like, if you're doing 13 events, that puts you into basically September when school starts again.
We used to go down to the beach to have fun at the beach. Now they're going down to the beach and playing tournaments.
Yeah, let the kids go to the pool. Let them get on their bikes, ride around. Let them play kick the can at night. You know, let them be kids.
But are you
get our families back?
Are you with Ron and thinking that? I don't think this can ever change.
I think it's going to be very hard to turn the tide right now. I really do. Unless the adults really take control of it. And as Ron did say, you get some kind of consensus. But I think it's definitely going to be hard to put this genie back in the bottle.
Okay, you've been listening to the O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald Hot Seat segment. Sponsored by O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald. Visit them at O'ConnorHomes.com for more information. And they like to say, when our sign is on the lawn, our name is on the line. Now it's time for our True Players to Watch segment. Since 2004, True has designed, engineered, and manufactured lacrosse handles for the most respected brands in the game. Now they're building them exclusively for their brand, True. They build them in their own manufacturing facilities with engineers, designers, and material specialists dedicated to improving your lacrosse performance. True is where lacrosse meets science. Visit www.truetothegame.com. For more information. We got a lot of players to watch this week. We'll start off with Ron. He's got a little list there with him.
Well, you know, look, we all live in the Maryland MIAA district, Mid-Atlantic region, which really, you know, we're fortunate. We have a ton of great players. And every week we'll spotlight, you know, a couple of guys that we really, really like. And I'm going to tell you one that I just love the kid, fantastic player, a kid named Felix Noor. Felix is a face-off specialist, you know, He's from Howard High School. As a sophomore, he's won 71% of his faceoffs. As a junior, he won 81% of his faceoffs and has a chance to potentially, you know, be an 85-90% faceoff specialist as a senior. He's a Towson University commit. He is absolutely a wonderful kid. He's a senior at Howard High School, so we're looking at a public school with all the MIAA schools and all the great players. You know, there are great players outside, you know, that area, whether it's public school in Baltimore County or Howard County, Anne Arundel, Hartford. There are some good players.
And Middleton out at Hereford, he's a heck of a player,
Yes.
Yep.
You know, one thing with Felix that I really, really like is that, you know, again, hard worker. You know, he's always doing something to improve his craft. He is a disciple of the Fast Break University guys that work out of the Cockeysville area with Jeremy Rawallo. And they just really, you know, Felix is just a dominant player. He's just, and again, he's been on the Under Armour teams and things of that. He's had the recognition, and he's someone that I'm really looking forward to watching this year. I was on the phone actually 2 days ago with Riverhill coach Keith Gonsolin, who they're playing Howard, I do believe, on Monday or Tuesday, and he's like, oh God, do you have someone that can actually give me a chance against this player? So he's so concerned and worried about him. I know the rest of the teams in Howard County, and then with the state playoffs, he's going to be one of the main reasons. He's similar to a Trevor Baptiste for Denver, how he plays in the high school ranks, because if you have possession of the ball, that really is one of the things that gives you the opportunity to win games and stop runs from your competition.
That's a great name, too, for a faceoff. Felix.
Oh,
I like
it.
I love it.
Felix,
that's awesome.
Noor. Remember that name.
Yeah.
Remember
great,
that
yeah.
name.
Great name. Great
yeah, one of my players to watch is a faceoff kid, too, from Gilman, who's had a really great start, Liam Muley. And Liam is a senior going to Drexel next year, I believe. And I was just reading some information on him where he had a game against, I believe it was St. Anne's Belfield, and he won 18 of 19 faceoffs. Gilman won the game. You know, Ron, you talked about Felix giving his team extra possessions. Boy, 18 and 19, those are Trevor Baptiste numbers, too. I think this kid's really going to come into his own this year and be a force in our league and, you know, might be part of that push to get Gilman back into the playoffs that they've been out
Where's
of the last couple
to,
years.
You know?
To Drexel.
Drexel,
yep.
I'm sorry.
So
okay,
that's
wow.
Liam Muley. Okay. Look out for him. Two other kids that I just want to mention, and I'm going to mention these guys because we have a great opportunity to go to Loyola University to the RAC on Saturday night, I believe, and watch them play. One's an attackman at Severn, and his name is Dylan Gergar. Dylan's going to University of Pennsylvania. Terrific attackman, scored over 100 points in the MIAA last year for a very good Severn team. He's also the kicker on their football team. He does a great job. And then Dan Shea from Spalding, a kid who can play attack and midfield, very slick player, knows the game really well, high IQ, has a great left-hand stick. I think Danny's going to have a breakout year for Spalding this year, and a team that, you know, a lot of people are saying, hey, don't sleep on Spalding. It sure would be nice to see them make some waves down in Anne Arundel County for Coach Phipps.
And it would be great to see Severn, you know, get up into the upper echelon as well.
Yeah, I think they have a new coach, Joe Christie,
right,
who was a defensive guy in college, really good player in college as well. And he's taken over for Jamie McNeely there.
Ron, you have any offensive players outside off the face-off acts that you like, or defense? You're a defense guy, so maybe you're gonna be a defensive guy today.
Sometimes he's a defensive guy.
like to be an offensive guy. You know, to be honest with you, I really study when I watch these games. I like the specialization a little bit. I've really become fascinated with the face-off acts and the defensive guys. To me, that's the exciting position. It's what I gravitated to when I was younger. I always thought that offense could be made by quality defensive plays, whether it's a stop, whether it's a ground ball, picking it up the field. And And like I said, you know, you guys have talked about a couple of these defensive players that have created a lot of offense over the course of time. I actually want to go back just one sec. You know, Coach Picado talked about a face-off man, and I talked about a face-off man. We're talking about the specialization and how that actually really it changes the game. It's really changed the game when you have the ability to have players like that. It really makes a huge difference, and it gives you the opportunity to be in every game. So that's important to me. As far as offensive guys, I always defer to Coach Brock. Let you talk about the offensive guys that you like, but to me, I just love to watch a really, really good skilled defensive player.
Hey, I got a great idea. Let's have Felix and Liam go at it and do a Braveheart. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Face off.
Love
the
Braveheart. Awesome. Love the Braveheart.
Well, you probably loved McDonough for years, because me watching McDonough, I've always loved their long stick middies. And it just seems like every year they have another one. And again, this year is the BJ Ferrar kid. But through the years, they've always had some guy out there on that wing. Rick, you've coached
against
these guys.
A couple of years ago, I think they had a kid, Danny Sweeney, who's either at Villanova or Georgetown. I'm trying to I can't remember where he went. Danny was a game changer. Tremendous range, terrific off the ground, you know, physical. He was outstanding. And I think BJ is very similar to that. You know, we talked about Michael Ubriaco being a game changer with his long pole.
Yep.
I think there's
another
one.
Calvin Hall, actually, with those guys, how much those long poles help generating offense, and they help with generating face-off numbers, positive face-off numbers.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all about, you know, the X, can that face-off guy pick it up?
How about that guy Tyler Mays, who went to Towson, who
Calvert
played
Hall
at Calvert
kid.
Hall? Wow, was
fantastic.
He was a game changer.
Yeah, and I, you know, I would add into all of this, I think if you look in the history of lacrosse behind most successful teams, you're going to find a standout pole to run the field.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the backbone of a team. And obviously, goaltending and face-offs and putting the ball in the goal and defending are pretty important. But that's a position that, as a youth coach, that I'm always looking for, is to find that who's the best athlete. Can he get up and down the field? Can he play the team's best middie? Can he come up with the ground balls? Can he create offense? And I'm in full agreement with you guys. That's what I enjoy looking for when I watch lacrosse, is who's getting up and down the field with the pole.
When I was growing up, there was a kid at he's my age, Laurie Millspaugh from Gilman. I'm not sure if you guys know who
he
is.
I do remember that name.
Laurie
yeah.
Millspaugh was a face-off guy, and he's the first guy that ever made All Metro as a face-off guy in the Baltimore Sun.
With a long pole?
No, he was a middie.
Even and over Radabaugh, over Doug Radabaugh and some of those great players.
Laurie
Ned?
Was the class of 76.
Okay. Okay.
Doug Radabaugh would have been is an all-metro middie as an overall middie.
All the way around, you're right. Yeah.
But this was the first time I ever remember seeing a specialization guy make an all-metro team. So, there you have it. They're the players to watch for this segment. Once again, this segment was brought to you by True. Visit www.truetothegame.com for more information. Now we're ready for the Cooper's Tavern Coach's Corner segment. Once again, Cooper's is a classic American establishment, specialized in only the freshest seafood, meats, poultry, and produce, along with an extensive beer and wine selection. Cooper's combines excellent service in a family-friendly atmosphere. And for this week's Coach's Corner, we're going to talk about the weather and how this snowstorm has just really fouled everything up.
Nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
It is a coach's nightmare, no doubt about it.
You ought to know.
An AD's nightmare. You know, everybody's talking about right now where we're going to practice, how we're going to get these games in, you know, jockeying for the same position, same places. You know, there are only a certain amount of fields out there. You know, some schools don't want to plow their field because they're worried about the turf. And this was a tricky storm because we had the ice first. And it's tough to plow that when you have the ice first. So, you know, I know for a fact what my days were like as a head coach when I saw a storm coming. I would have to be proactive and make some phone calls and get on the horn with some people and say, hey, I need a favor. You get a few favors to call in over the time, and you're fortunate. But it's hard. You know, we talked last week about building team chemistry. How do you build team chemistry when you haven't practiced in a couple of days, right?
Well, you're not around. I've seen some teams during this kind of weather practice in gymnasiums, and it looks like nothing is getting accomplished.
You can't get anything done. It's very difficult.
Yeah, not a fan.
The lighting is very difficult to see. The balls are bouncing everywhere.
Right.
And, you know, let's make a little joke of it. When the storms and the weather comes, you know, a lot of people talk about the milk and the toilet paper comes off the shelves in the supermarket. The Pepto-Bismol comes off for me because I'm trying to find a place. I'm trying to, not just being a coach, here in the, the school district around the area here, but I'm also a club director. I have to find fields. I have to, worry about games, the schedule. It is a nightmare. And you know what? It wears on you. It really does. And we're in a time frame. One of the problems that we have, and it's the same thing with the college game of lacrosse. You know, lacrosse is a game that's beautiful where the fans are out and they love the sport and. You know, how can they be loving the sport when it's 22 degrees outside and there's snow on the fields, it's windy? The college lacrosse season, all your early good games that we used to love and enjoy are no longer because now the weather is really a major player and it affects everything from, again, it's you're not at a game on April 1st where it's sunny and warm. That April 1st game has been moved to, February 25th. And now
you hope that it's on TV now. Right, from the college level.
Because you
take a look at, I was watching a Hopkins game earlier this year, and it was horrendous weather, and there was probably, 100 people in the stands, and so that was a...
That was a Princeton game. I was at that game like a dummy.
100. Yeah. We were talking about indoor and outdoor and the conditions and the weather. You got to remember something. With all these indoor facilities that are around, right, lacrosse is played outside. It's great that you can go indoors, but that would be cool if you're playing indoor lacrosse, right?
Mm-hmm. Right on.
But you're playing outdoor lacrosse, and the perception, like Ronnie talked about, of what you're the arena that you're playing in, and the spacing, and the balls, and the lighting, and the goaltending, and where kids are, it actually can hurt your team. In many cases. And I say that from the youth level because we do practice at an indoor facility that's very tight and small. And we go most of the winter on one of the teams. And it's amazing when we go outside, it's like these kids have never played before because they've been training so tight together. And it's just a different game. And there's really a setback. When we do go outside, it takes a good month or so or many practices before they start to really learn the speed of the game with how it's properly played. And, of course, we can get into that another segment about the size of the field. What's the correct size of the field for these younger kids, too?
Well, I'm going to ask all three of you guys then. The warmer weather states. I went to the Duke Loyola game, and I went down the roster. There was one kid from Maryland, I believe, on Duke's team, and only a handful at Loyola. I saw California, Florida, Texas, Oregon, a lot of warm weather states. They can practice a lot easier than we can. They don't have
Absolutely.
This problem.
Absolutely, and they're starting earlier, too.
Is that one of the reasons why we're seeing this game?
That's part of it. Absolutely. The game's growing, and that is definitely part of it because in those places, it's great to be able to be out in San Diego playing at 75 degrees in February, man. There's nothing better. So I certainly think that's a piece of it. Yep.
No doubt. And also, Mac, Danowski's not a big fan of Baltimore area players. Gotta love him, but he's a Long Island guy. Ronnie and I knew him back in the day.
Ron, do you have any comments on that one?
Yeah, they're a Long Island guy. Look, Coach Danowski's been around for a long time. It's funny because I graduated high school. I'm going to age myself now, 1984, and Coach Danowski.
You're a youngster.
To CW Post at that point.
Is that where he was?
There.
Yeah.
He was there, and then he actually, that year, that summer he switched to
Hofstra,
and a couple of the guys went there. I was already committed and or was I really enjoyed my time at Towson on my recruiting visit, so I really wanted to go there. So I don't think anything would have changed my opinion, but he was a great guy. But, you know, look, he has a kind of recruit or kind of kid that he likes, and there's nothing wrong with that. Now, when you talk about also the areas, you know, you take someone like myself or like, you know, John Blatchley next to me, if John wants to move his family to Texas, which has happened with a lot of good lacrosse players, getting out of breath talking so fast. he moves his family there, you're taking a knowledgeable coach that now all of a sudden is in Texas. Yeah. He's teaching these kids, and now all of a sudden they're getting better. They're understanding how to play this game at a faster pace. And I think that we always talk about this. It's not always necessarily all the skills. It's about how to play the game faster. And faster creates better athletes, creates better players. And one of the things that you're seeing is a lot of these guys are the Scott Hockstead moving to California and, you know, Kevin Finneran moving to Florida. Now, all of a sudden, these people are developing these players, and they're coming back, whether it's warm weather, whether it's the other. I'm not sure what it is. Yeah, they can practice a little bit more, but, you know, look, when I grew up in Long Island, it didn't matter, the weather. You know, we got out there, we practiced. They didn't care about the grass fields then. We didn't have turf fields either. So you just practiced in the snow, you practiced. You had a couple orange balls in his car. Oh, we had practice. That's the way it was.
Right. I remember I went to Washington Lee. I watched the team play, and I remember during snow, it was running time. They ran the streets of Lexington. You know,
yeah, when we're talking about different
lots.
Areas,
sometimes we practiced on a parking lot.
Oh, that's what we did at college. Yep. We didn't have turf. We didn't have indoor facilities. Yeah. We went on the parking lot. But Brock, I'd be interested to hear you talk about the perspective of being in Baltimore, playing here and coaching here, and then going to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So what Ronnie was talking about is you get a guy that's so knowledgeable that now all of a sudden has popped into a place that is not a hotbed of lacrosse. How'd that work out?
It was phenomenal. I tell you, when I got out there, you know, there were probably a handful of teams that were playing, and really only two or three competitively. And, you know, it was right about that time also that the folks out in Colorado started jumping ship from football to lacrosse because they saw this sport that was fast-paced, that you could hit, you could be physical, you know, and it really appealed to some of those athletic kids that were playing football. All they needed was coaching. And I am telling you, it was fun coaching them because they hung on every word and tried to do every single thing, apply everything you told them. As a coach, there's nothing better than that, you know? So we see that now. Like six former players of mine are out in California. I have a great friend who has been down in Florida for years. You know him, Long Island guy, Jeff Goldberg.
Absolutely.
Okay, brother Wack. He's been down there at St. Andrews in Florida.
Son's gonna be playing for me this
summer. Let me tell you, he did a tremendous job for 20 years. He really was a guy that started, I think, the lacrosse push in Florida.
And who's the head coach down there?
And now it's Tony Seaman has taken over for him. And then you got Stan Ross, an MSA transplant at Oxbridge Academy.
Right.
This is what's happening. We're seeing these guys go into other places and really developing the sport. And as a coach, it is really satisfying to do that.
Now, one other thing, too, is that if you look, I know that a couple of our local teams, Boys Latin McDonough, had the opportunities to go down to Florida just recently. And when you look who they're playing, it's McDonough's first game. But they're going to play Oxbridge.
They're middle of the season.
7-1
right.
already.
Yep.
Or they're playing St. Andrews and they're 9-0. I saw McDonough girls play Vero Beach. The Vero was, I think, 7-0 or 7-1.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of games.
Now they're 7-1.
Yes.
Right
and,
on.
Absolutely. You know, and that's something that is. You know, it's seasonal because you look at our games, we're getting into, by the time the MIAA gets into the bulk of their season, they're already finished in Florida.
Right.
So they almost have to keep a stick in their hands so they can be part of the Under Armour games and some of these other things that go on because their season's been over. Our kids actually roll right from the last practice, then they're going to tryouts, you know, two or three days later. So having that part is just, it makes it so much different.
Great stuff. And we're sitting here hoping that this snow melts very soon. So this has been the Cooper's Tavern Coach's Corner segment. Once again, I invite everybody to go out to Cooper's Tavern and check it out. Check out their burgers. They have a great beer selection and an even better wine selection. So check out Cooper's Tavern. Moving right along, we're going to go to the McKenzie Commercial Real Estate Royalty and Rivals segment. Each company within the McKenzie family was born from their commitment to serve a client's needs, starting with McKenzie Management Company and through to their latest addition, Data Story. McKenzie has extended its service line to help their clients meet their real estate objectives. To be truly innovative is to be in touch and committed. With McKenzie, it's personal. Visit www.mckenziecommercial.com to learn more. And once again, we are joined here with John Blatchley. Our Royalty and Rivals this week is going to be a fantastic Catholic rivalry that really started probably in the 1920s with football, but it's Calvert Hall Loyola. And I think we have a lot to talk about. And John, what does that rivalry mean to you as a Loyola Don?
Yeah, that's it, really. you know, it's when you – I was fortunate enough to go to Loyola, and I got there in 84 and graduated in 88, and, you know, you learn pretty quickly that Calvert Hall's it. Everything goes through phases, you know, as far as who's the dominant power around, and that's what's so strong about the MIAA. You look at the same teams today – Brock, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're all in power. You can throw McDonough in there now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. Maybe they struggled for a little bit. And St. Paul's, I think, wasn't on the top of their game in the mid-'80s, but they're dominant. And so, you know, it's the same players. Calvert Hall was a really strong team. And I think you really just need to look at the coaches itself. I mean, Michael Thomas was the head coach when I was at Loyola. We had Joe McFadden and John Hawes. Two phenomenal coaches there, and I think believe the Kellys, one of the Kellys helped coach then, and who was the other one? Brock, I was thinking
Dave Creighton was
Dave
there.
Dave Creighton was there, and I know
was it Dave Petromala Loyola a couple years?
No, Loyola College. He was at Loyola College.
Loyola College.
I
mean,
he coached at Gilman for a year.
That's
a year
Gilman.
Two.
He was at Gilman.
Yep.
And one of the Bozell brothers was coaching for a little bit against me. Yeah. But, you know, it Calvert Hall was phenomenal top to bottom. When I was I was fortunate enough to make the varsity my sophomore year. They had just as good as a team as you'll ever see on paper. I think one of those 2 years they had 14 All-Americans. That was either 87 or 86. And we were fortunate enough to get by them. That's the way I would classify it, get by them. We had some strong teams there, but the rivalry was great. You know, the only downside about playing over at Calvert Hall back then was the way the field was set up. It was against the roads.
Yep. Right on LaSalle Drive.
In
the cage.
Dirt,
grass. Wasn't really like, you know, the setting where, you know, the crowd would be delayed in their response. Whereas, you know, I think the cool thing with Hargan Field, I'm of course biased, is that it sits in a hole there, and it's pretty loud, and it's a great place to watch.
One of the greatest venues to watch a game. I remember being a little kid and watching my brothers play in the Calvert Hall Loyola rivalry from the 70s, early 70s. Place would be packed. It was just electric.
Listen to some of these names. This is lacrosse royalty. You have Ryan Conrad, Patrick Kelly. These are Kelly Award winners from these two schools. Ben Rubior, Kevin Huntley, Barrett Dixon, Scott Diggs, Carl Zeller, Tom Nugent, Kevin Pelkey, who I think you played against Kevin, didn't you?
My old roommate.
Tom Groninger, Pat Welsh, Tom Sears, Ned Radebaugh, Kevin Mahan, Franz Wittelsberger, Doug Radebaugh, on and on it goes.
That's a who's who right there.
It's a
there.
Who's who, and it's
it
from
is.
Those
Hall
two schools.
Famers.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, I really, someone asked me the other day, they were talking about back then the MSA, right, the MIAA now. They were asking me, you know, why wasn't Calvert Hall that dominant? And you know, I was thinking to myself, who'd you hear that from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were so dominant. And so, you know, a lot of people compare in the past as to who won it. Right. Everybody said, who won it that year? Why weren't they there? Why? Everybody was in the mix. Everyone. St. Joe back then, Severn, St. Mary's, as strong as can be. Everybody was in the mix. Some breaks worked for others that, you know, just got a little bit of lucky.
That's
as
what
well.
Makes that league so special. There's no doubt about it. Rivalries like this. No
doubt.
One
of the things, too, is that you know, look, there's a lot of good lacrosse players. They all can't play on one team, mm-hmm. especially if they want to play. So they do go to Calvert Hall. They do go to Loyola. There's a preference for one reason or another why they pick the school they do. You know, again, when I came down here from New York, all I heard about was how good, you know, Loyola was. And, you know, I knew a lot of the kids. They were good.
They were dominant. I remember John coming over here. I think, John, your senior year playing on Blue Gold Day here at St. Paul's. Loyola beat us 16-0.
Oh. Ouch.
16-0. That was a dominant era for the Dons. I mean, you know, even you go back into the early 80s with Steve Mutchler on some of those teams.
Yep.
He was tremendous. I played against Steve and Tommy Hawes. You know, they were outstanding players. This is when public schools still played against private schools in the regular season. Yep. They were outstanding, and Coach McFadden had a dynasty there that he put together. What I loved watching about those teams and the rivalry game is how hard they played against each other. And yeah. I think that's still the way it is today. You watch a Loyola Calvert Hall game. These guys are battling to the last whistle. They're in excellent shape, and I know, Blatch, you guys did a fair amount of running at Loyola.
That was it. I mean, it was, you know, the team policed itself. You had a lot of, obviously, guys that had nice stick work and good athletes and could put the ball in the net. They're 2- and 3-sport athletes, yeah. when we were talking about, you know, during the tenure of a year. But at the end of the day, Joe McFadden and John Hawes were firm believers in a lot of track work. And we ran on the track just about every day, and they would break us down into speed groups, and we would run 3:30s. And if you fell 2 seconds off your times, your best times, then you would have to drop to the next group, and it was not fun. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was a difference per se as far as talent. When you look at Calvert Hall, you look at Boys Latin, you look at Loyola, you look at St. Mary's and Severn, I think the talent at St. Joe back then, there was talent on all those teams. I think the difference for at least my tenure, what I saw and experienced, was we were in shape.
Yeah, I think
we were in shape.
I think the talent may have been balanced, but I'm looking at what Loyola did in the 80s.
And I got the stats
in front of me. They won 6. They were in 4 more championship games in an 11-year period. I mean, I don't think that's ever going to happen again, that kind of dominance that Loyola took with everybody else.
And you know what's amazing, too? And I know it's different times back then, but, you know, there was financial aid that was available. And, of course, I know that the cost of tuition back then was certainly different. But we didn't have kids on scholarship. And that's really remarkable when you think back. Maybe there was one guy that might have been a handshake or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, figuring of going through the school for 4 years, you would know, hey, that guy's on a scholarship. It just didn't happen.
Well, let me ask you this. When you saw Calvert Hall on the schedule, did you guys got hungrier? You wanted that victory more than anything?
Well,
I
think it was just another MSA team. I really do. I think that the fans all bought into the rivalry, and I think it also helped that we had our school rally behind it, the Loyola Calvert Hall rivalry. But I think that was just kind of a given within the campus itself. To us, we looked at a different game.
The sport itself, did the sport matter where the rivalry was more intense? Was it lacrosse? Or, you know, I know the Loyola Calvert Hall football rivalry is huge, and that's been very, very big for years. Does that spill over to lacrosse?
Sure.
Does it make it any more?
Sure, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think if these two teams play water polo against each other, they're going to have a rally and you know, get fired up for that.
Now
they
do.
And you know, it's kind of cool to see. I mean, you know, from the football side of it, I just remember Calvert Hall being so dominant for so long, and I did play football, that it was kind of cool for us to start getting some wins, because we weren't in that realm of eating a good turkey, so-called, on Thanksgiving night with a lot of wins. So that was kind of cool. But, yeah, it does carry over for sure. In fact, you know, we have a day off if Loyola beats Calvert Hall.
Yeah. That's right.
So that's
right.
Cool. That.
Real quick story, and then, John, I got a question for you about Loyola Calvert Hall. You know, back in 73, I can remember my brother being on the team, playing on the same attack with Emmett Vogel and Steve Shabdak and Bob McBride. Calvert Hall was coming off of an undefeated season in 72. Dick Adell was their coach, I believe, in 72.
Correct.
Coach Mike Thomas took over in 73. Calvert Hall had guys like Lance Kohler, Dale Kohler. They had Paul O'Brien on attack.
Tommy
Rick
Wagner,
Cassina in the goal. Tommy
Rocky
Wagner.
Rhodes.
And the rivalry between Loyola and Calvert Hall was so intense, and the teams were so tight that year. They were neck and neck going towards, look like, a championship run, both teams. Calvert Hall came over to Loyola, and I can remember rolling down that hill and having my buddies, we used to play King of the Hill back there on Hargaden Field, watching the game. And the final score of that game was 7-6. It was the end of the season. 7-6, Calvert Hall edged Loyola. Well, the next Friday, Calvert Hall and Loyola had to do it all over again to get the berth in the title game. And I'm not sure who they were going to play
against,
in the title
against
game.
Gilman.
And they had to play the game, Mac, over at Gilman in a mud fest. And Calvert Hall won that game 7-6.
Yep.
Again, to go into
that?
It. And I just tell you, my brother, I remember him coming home from that heartbroken, yeah, that he had lost to Calvert Hall, not once, but twice. He still talks about it today. As a matter of fact, he can't stand to see a score end in 7-6 because of that rivalry. So, Blatch, I ask you, what's your greatest moment from your Calvert Hall Loyola experience?
Well, that's funny because, you know, I ended up living, my roommate was Kevin Pelkey, a standout, you know, high school All-American several times over, and he still, to this day, is upset that they never beat us. So I'd have to say that we never lost. It's really my standout memory from Calvert Hall Loyola rivalries. And again, these are really good teams,
yeah,
that on a given day anything could happen. But we were fortunate for those 3 years to get those victories. So I guess it was a standout one would have been my junior year, which was 87, where we beat Calvert Hall in the championship.
Outstanding.
That was cool. I was more of, utility type of player, and I had a pretty decent game, I think, with what I could remember, and so that was probably my standout.
I'll chime in. I think the score was 7-6, according to my record.
Too much.
So
too much.
There you go.
Yeah.
Seven to six, baby.
It just shows you how you know, these teams, you throw it in a hat. And, you know, you throw Boys Latin in there. St. Joe back then was phenomenal, too.
Yeah, Dave Casemire and those teams.
Oh, yeah.
Mike McKenna was the goalie.
No doubt about it.
McKenna,
you know, and Severn always came up, and St. Mary's always came up, and they were some tough, tough teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the MIAA, I'm just a fan of it, because Tuesday and Friday, right? I think it still is. You know, to this day, I work in Timonium, and I'll shoot on over here to St. Paul's or shoot over to Loyola or Calvert Hall or whatever it may be. I did get a chance to watch Calvert Hall play against the Hill Academy, and I can't believe I was only there a half, and they were dominating the Hill Academy like I've never seen a team dominate before. I leave, they're up by 4, and I heard they lost.
Right. 6-5 in overtime.
How about that?
That's
crazy.
They didn't score.
Score a hole.
And 2 days before it, I saw Blatch in the stands over at Loyola watching Loyola in the Hill Academy.
I'm getting around. Yep.
So. Is he actually working? Is
all
that
right?
We're trying to figure that out.
Well, it was good to support my friend Brody Merrill, who's the coach there, and so we got together when he was in town, and I was, you know, fortunate enough to get over to see those games. But talk about a tale of two games.
Yeah.
I left watching Calvert Hall play 2 weeks ago with my jaw dropped. I could not believe, because I saw the Hill Academy play, and I thought, man, these are men. I couldn't believe the talent that's on Calvert Hall's field, the size of those players, the way they move the ball. I was at all. I was at all. And I know I haven't been able to see a lot of high school lacrosse, and I haven't been able to catch Calvert Hall play the last couple of years. I couldn't believe what I was watching, and I was just double shocked that they lost. Tells you how good the Hill Academy is to suffer that first half and come back.
Right. No doubt Calvert Hall is going to bounce back from that for sure. So, again, Loyola Calvert Hall, one of the best rivalries in the country. And again, this segment has been brought to you by McKenzie Commercial Real Estate. It's our royalty and rival segment. Visit www.mckenziecommercial.com to learn more. Let's go to our Heyday segment, brought to you by Kelly Payroll. And Kelly and Associates Insurance Group, Kelly Payroll Heyday segment. Kelly is pleased to support VarsitySportsNetwork.com.
Kelly & Associates helps employees and employers save time, money, and hassle in investigating the intricacies of insurance, benefits, payroll, and workforce challenges. Visit www.kellyway.com to put their people, technology, and services to work for you. And welcome back. We're welcoming back John Blatchley, our Hay Days guest today. And we're gonna try to embarrass John a little bit and talk about his career and go over some of his stats. He was a heck of a player. And I know Rick coached against him. Oh, no, you played against him.
No, I coached,
against him.
I missed coaching against him by a year. I started in 89 as a varsity coach here. I was a JV coach in 87 and 88 here at St. Paul's.
So let's just go over some of his stats, and then Ron's going to chime in with all his Towson University career, which was also off the charts and phenomenal. But his senior year, he was a second-team All-Metro player and pretty much one of the leaders on the team with some of the other great players there. Again, as we just talked about in the earlier segment, John's best memory was defeating Calvert Hall in the title game by a score of 7-6. And then he went on to Towson State University, playing for Coach Runk with Ron. And here's some of his stats there. He had 182 career points, which is sixth best all time at Towson. 125 career assists, which is tied with a fella named Bobby Grebe. We all know of Bob Grebe's career, with 57 goals to go with that. And he also was a member of the 1991 championship runner-up team. I believe he had a couple goals in that game. So, Ron, what do you remember from John in his Towson days?
I don't want to embarrass you. I know he's sitting next to me, so I'll try to be good with this. But I'm gonna be straight with you. John was one hell of a player. He was a little guy. He was a little squirmy little guy. And again, don't be upset. He's actually pushing me a little bit right now. But John, when you first saw him, he was just a guy that. He played lacrosse. I mean, he looked more like he was like on the cross country team. But let me tell you, when he stepped out on the field, he was one tough kid. And you know, I had the pleasure of not just coaching him, but I coached him as he was a junior in college. But when he was a freshman, we actually lived together. So we lived in a house right off campus in Towson together and got to know him really, really well. So by the time I actually started to coach him, you know, I really knew a lot about him. And, you know, he was a very crafty player. He was quick. He was someone, you know, my best friend, Coach Petromala down at Hopkins, I used to tell him all the time, you know, we got this kid, John Blatchley, and I know him. He's a nice little player, but I don't think John ever got the respect that he deserved until probably our run to the national championship. And then he had another year after that, which was phenomenal. But, you know, John was a player that, as an attackman, you know, he'd frustrate you because he'd run you, he'd turn you, and then he'd place a beautifully perfect pass on someone's stick. They didn't have to move it much. He was just a beautiful feeder. And that's, if you look at his statistics from Towson, Bob Grebe being a Hall of Famer and a three-time All-American and attackman of the year for Towson, they won a national championship in 1974. He's a legend. Him and Jim D'Arcangelo were legends in our program. And for John to actually tie him, it's amazing for one. But two, it tells you a little bit about who he is as a player. So I really enjoyed the opportunity. He was a sponge. He listened to everything that I had to say. I used to strap it on, play against him in practice all the time, and hopefully making him a little bit better of a player. But for all we say and all we do about the things that we commend him for, of how great of a player he was, he's a great guy, and you know, that's what I love most about him, because you know, this sport is about the people, and that's what drew me to lacrosse, what kept me in lacrosse. It's not just what you do on the field, it's what you are outside of the field and off the field. And John was one of those guys who did it well both on and off the field. And he was a pleasure to coach, and he was my teammate at Mount Washington for many, many years, so he was a pleasure being a teammate of his as well.
I told you, John, we were going to embarrass you. So,
I remember Blatch just being, you know, he made other players around him better. Yep. I liken him to Steve Nash in basketball. John had, as you said, Ron, super quick feet, great COD, change of direction, and man, he could lay a feed right on your ear without you even moving the stick. So that, you know, they always say it's all about the feed makes the play. Blatch was that guy. He could see plays develop before they happened. And that's the mark of a great player, seeing the plays develop before they happen and then making other people around him better. And Blatch did that both at Loyola and at Towson and at Mount Washington. You're absolutely right. He was part of a tremendous attack unit and a tremendous run for Mount Washington Lacrosse Club.
You know, and I look at the guys that, you know, once John got to school and got inserted into the starting lineup at Towson, you know, he made Mike DeSimone the scorer that he was in the middle. And, you know, don't forget about Glenn Smith, the great BL player and graduate in 1986. You know, Glenn was a great player on his own. But when he got John to get him the ball, it really changed the way he played as a player.
Elevated his game.
Absolutely. Yeah. No absolutely. Doubt. Yep.
I mean, John was All-American two times in the 91 and 92. And not to take anything away from All-Americans today, but there's so many of them, and there's so many divisions. Back in the 80s, 90s, 70s, and earlier, when you made All-American, it really meant something.
Yeah, it wasn't watered down. I absolutely agree with you on that one. You know, these guys, they earned it. They earned it.
Yeah. Well, you had 10 guys who made first-team All-American. You had 10 guys that made second team All-American. You didn't have four attackmen. Last time I checked, there were only three on the field at once. And, you know, granted, there's sometimes it's hard to decipher between, you know, a John Zolberti or a Tom Marichak, you know, and you got to pick one or the other. I understand that.
Sure.
But, you know, it started with including and making it a fourth, which turned it into a fifth. And now these first-team All-Americans, you know, you can have 14, 15 guys first-team All-Americans.
Well, you have face-off guys. You have long-stick middies guys.
Definitely the specialty
middies,
players.
Specialty guys like we talked about in an earlier segment.
You know, it even trickles down to high school. Now all MIAA, I think, is your top 20 guys in the league, you know. So,
right.
And you're right. Not all 20 can play on the field at the same time.
And I'm going to be honest with you. The gentleman I'm sitting next to was one of the best players that I'd ever seen on the field to get the recognition that he probably didn't get what he deserved. Was he as talented as some of the first-team All-Americans out there? Absolutely. The people I always remember, Dave Petromala told me a long time ago, he's like, don't ever worry about what the paper says, and meaning the paper of being a first-team, second-team, third-team All-American. He's like, what matters most is what your peers believe and think about you as a player. Because if your peers think that you were great, that's all that matters, because those are the ones that matter most to you.
Right. There's no doubt John was one of the great players in high school and in college, and we want to thank him again for joining us here for our Heyday segment. Once again, brought to you by Kelly Payroll, www.kellyway.com, to put their people, technology, and services to work for you. Kelly and Associates Insurance Group and Kelly Payroll brought to you the today's Heyday segment. Thanks again, John. Now it's time for Varsity Sports Network Top 10 Teams segment. We're going to go through the top 10 again. The teams haven't changed this week. We still have the top 10 as it was last week. VarsitySportsNetwork.com comes in with number 10, we have Hereford. Number 9, Severn. Number 8, Gilman. 7 is St. Paul's. 6 is Severna Park, a tough team from Anne Arundel County. Staying there again is St. Mary's in Anne Arundel County. Then at 4, we have Loyola Blakefield. 3, Boys Latin. 2, McDonough School. And number 1, once again this week, is Calvert Hall. Even though they had a tough loss against Hill Academy last week, I believe it was 6-5. And so looking at the top 10, we have a lot of interesting games this week. A lot of the public schools are playing some of the private schools, and some of the area schools are also going to be playing some of the New York Long Island schools. So I guess one of the first games that comes to mind is tomorrow is Boys Latin against Hereford. Hereford's number 10, BL's number 3. I think it could be a tough game for BL.
That's exciting. It's an exciting game. As a fan, again, you'd love to see these crossover games where, those public school giants want to take on the mighty MIAA schools. Yep. And BL's a fantastic school this year. They're extremely loaded at all positions. How does Hanford stack up? I think it's going to be a good game. I think Hanford, one of the things that they have the toughness factor that I really like. Coach really has done a great job of getting those guys ready. And look, they believe in themselves. They've been there before, and I really believe that they're going to do a great job and hopefully keep this game close. Early in the season is the best time to play them. That's when you get the hiccups with some of the better teams.
Coach? I think two big factors in that game are going to be the depth of Boys Latin and the talent that they have all over the field, but also a huge advantage for BL is playing at home. Right. It's tough to go up to the HZ, the Hereford Zone, and play a night game. BL has the Bulls on their home turf, and that bodes well for the Lakers.
Here's another sort of intersectional game. Gilman is playing Malvern. Now, again, these games are what's on the schedule. Hopefully the weather isn't going to change any of these, but Malvern's always been a tough team up in the Philly area. Rick, I know you've played against them many times.
My friend John Nostrant, the Haverford coach, says Malvern's the team to beat up there this year. So I'm really interested to watch this game and see where Gilman is right now. They're talking about making the playoffs this year and getting back into the playoff run. This will be a good litmus test for Gilman to see if they can play tough with Malvern.
Here's another goodie is number one Calvert Hall is going to play Conestoga of Pennsylvania up in the Philly. They're a public school, I believe.
They are in a big public school.
I know.
It's always a battle for Calvert Hall against Conestoga. Yeah. I think Conestoga beat them last year, if I'm not mistaken. One of their only losses.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
No, I've seen Conestoga, over the past, 6-7 years, have some fantastic teams. I know that they've been up against Haverford for the team up in the Philadelphia area with probably what you consider the top players, the top team. They've really have done a great job. One of the things, we don't get to see them enough. We don't get to see them come down here enough. I'd love to see them a little bit more. We talk about Malvern and LaSalle and some of these other schools from Philly. They play a great brand of lacrosse up there. And those kids have been talented. We talk about Hotbeds. They do this exactly what, their schools are very similar to what the IAC and DC is to the MIAA up here. In the Baltimore region, there's a lot of really, really good schools. There's a lot of talented players. And Conestoga, being a public, I do believe they're a public school.
They are. Yep. Yeah.
They battle with them. Hand and fist right to the end. So they've got a good team, and I'd love to see that game. I wish I could.
Here's one I know you're going to be interested in, Ron. Chaminade is going to play McDonough at Episcopal Academy outside of Philly.
That
team.
Absolutely. Chaminade, year in and year out, is a very, very skilled and talented team. And, up in Long Island, we're known for, as when you go to or you grow up in a town, you typically play for your town team. It's very different from the Maryland area where a lot of kids go to private school to continue their education and their high school careers. Where up in Long Island, you went to your public school. Public schools reign up in New York. And there's really two powerhouses that Chaminade, St. Anthony, Catholic schools.
They play each other like four times a season.
They really do.
Are they the Loyola Calvert Hall of Long Island?
You'd probably say they are.
They are,
absolutely.
Mac, yes.
And again, you do have your other rivalries on the island that are very strong. But when you talk about Chaminade, their team is very, very strong this year. And I know that, them and both St. Anthony's, if they do play McDonough or any of the schools down here, that is going to be a wonderful game to watch. You're going to have a lot of grit, a lot of physicality that's coming from that Chaminade team, but there's also a lot of finesse, and they're a fun team to watch. I do believe they're one of the top 10 nationally ranked teams. So it's going to be a great game, great battle, and I wish it was down here at McDonough or a local field here, not at Episcopal, but I really look forward to seeing the recap of that game.
Hats off to both of those coaches for scheduling this game and bringing Baltimore and Long Island together up in Philly. You know, right. I think that's off to him. That's a great matchup.
I've actually been to a Chaminade open house, and I was what a cool school. I really thought it was really unique place. A friend of mine's son was applying there, and I went to the open house and had a wonderful time. I thought it was really, really neat kids there. Really liked it a lot.
And again, like I said, it's a great school. It's actually what the schools on the island, you know, both St. Anthony's and Chaminade, they're very affordable. They have a lot of kids, a lot of support from the community. And they really, again, you know, there's some special athletes that have been there over the years. So, and that rivalry, like you said, you talk about St. Anthony's and Chaminade, is very similar to ones that you have here. The only difference is those teams probably play a few more times throughout the course of the year. I think they play twice, typically during the course of the regular season and usually for a championship game.
And then, of course, for Saturday night, I believe it's probably the opening of the MIA schedules is Severn versus Spalding over at Loyola Ridley's Field.
Yeah, they pushed that opening to this Saturday night, the opening of the MIAA, because typically it doesn't start till April 3rd. So I think this is a great matchup, excuse me, between these two schools, powerhouses from Anne Arundel County, to showcase what they have up here in Baltimore. And, you know, you have a Severn program that's always battled and been a contender, if you ask me, over time. Last year, they just barely missed the playoffs. 2 years ago, they made it to the Final Four. So, you know, this is a program that has a lot of history. Spalding is a program that's on the rise. Coach Brian Phipps has done a great job building this program from within, and he had a young team for years, and now those kids are coming of age, and it's one of the teams that I'm really interested to see how they perform in the MIAA, because I think this could be a breakout year for Spalding.
Probably one of the things that's going to be fun about that game is these kids all know each other. They're all from Anne Arundel County. You know, I'm sure both schools have tried to, you know, recruit both the kids to go to either one of the schools. And they all know each other. They're probably friends off the field, but on the field, they're competitors.
Yep.
They both want to win.
Well, we talk about, you know, again, this sport is there's a, you know, every single year there's more and more great players that come through the ranks. And again, with every subject that we talked here about specialized training, everything else, there's more and more players. And what's happening is the traditional, what you would consider maybe St. Mary's being the power of Anne Arundel County, not anymore. You have a lot of these other schools that are doing really, really well. I remember Severn, they had a pretty young team. I think it was 2 years ago, quarterfinals came up here and beat St. Paul's in a game.
Yep.
And that was a young team. And again, a lot of those guys are now those sophomores or seniors. And, you know, maybe they make a push this year. And it's nice to see, because the traditional powers, you know, always need to be rocked in a sense. And it makes them work harder, so to speak.
Yeah, never take a team lightly. Nope. Especially an MIA team.
That's
never
right.
Take anybody lightly. So I think there you have it for our top 10 this week, the VarsitySportsNetwork.com top 10 teams and some of the games that are going to be going on this weekend. And once again, let us know what you think. Go onto the VarsitySportsNetwork.com website, check out the podcast, click on that, and get back to us. Give us your feedback. Let us know what you think. Are we right? Are we wrong? What are some of the topics you think we need to talk about? So thank you for tuning in with podcast number 2. We'll talk to you next week.